you love your job so much that every Monday you say TGIM? If not, it's time to find better with Trib Live Jobs and Monster. Millions of jobs, millions of reasons to love Monday again. Looking for jobs in the greater Pittsburgh area? Visit jobs.triblive.com today. Duffy's Beer presents the morning show on Trib Live Radio featuring Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and Tim Benz. 294 Curry Hollow Road, 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com.
The Trib Live Radio Triple Threat.
He wants three. You know that's a triple.
Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and now Tim Benz right here on Trib Live Radio.
Tim Benz is off to harass Mike Tomlin at the press conference at noon today over on the south side. Josh Taylor and I left alone in the studio. That's because our other buddy, Guy Junker, is out on the west coast in San Diego after covering the late-night game last night, Steelers 24 and Chargers 20. Guy, quite the entertaining game for probably a lot of the wrong reasons, but wow, what a finish. I don't know where to begin on this. I guess let's start with the locker room reaction. What was the biggest takeaway from covering the room after that win last night?
Well, you would have thought they just won a playoff game. I mean, you know how it is, Ken. Most of the time, they're not as down as the average person would think they'd be and not as up. They accept it pretty much as business, but there was a lot of whooping and hollering, and the San Diego guys coming off the field were screaming words that we can't use on the radio. They were pissed. So it was pretty emotional on both sides, because where I was standing waiting to get in the locker room was right at the split. I was equidistant from the two locker rooms, so I could see guys coming off both ways. I tweeted out at one point, it might even been early in the fourth quarter, that there wasn't an empty seat in that building, but there are a lot of people that probably wish they weren't there, because that was a lousy football game. But it turned into a fantastically interesting game, if not a well-played game, and certainly a dramatic finish. And when it was all over, I'm certainly glad I was there to see it. It was different than anything I had seen. The swings were incredible. I mean, they let them march right down the field and score a touchdown, and then they produced four straight three and outs. And then in the second half, Blake returns the interception to give them the lead, and they allow them to score then on the next three plays after a long period of time of completely thwarting them. The third quarter, the second quarter, and the end of the first quarter, San Diego couldn't do anything offensively. Then all of a sudden, when you really need the defense, they allow scores on three straight drives. So it was bizarre. It just kept going back and forth. And how many guys would have the guts to call not only to go for the touchdown, which I think was the correct call. I stood standing on the sideline, and Sally Wiggins standing next to me said, "What do you think?" I said, "This is what they got to do." I said, "This offense is too inconsistent. Do you have a better chance of May, especially after the penalty, which doesn't seem like much, but it does move it up a foot. The penalty was enough to give them the touchdown. Another foot away, they don't score on that play. So I think they had a better chance of scoring from the 1 foot line than they would have outlasting them in overtime."
If Bell doesn't make it in, Guy, I'm sure we're complaining, or some people are, about the play call itself. What do you think, though? Because I do find that Bell, and he told me this last year, is better when he gets the ball deep like that and can let the play develop a little bit. Then again, time was a factor, so it probably wasn't real smart, except if you get in.
Well, I asked him specifically afterwards. I said, "Le'Veon, anybody, the hard thing there has to be that patient." I said, "There's 5 seconds left. You get the ball. You're already deep. You want to hit that line. You want to go for it." And yet, we timed it on our camera. Cameraman Dan, he got a fantastic shot. He was all over TV. He ran out on the field and was right there with everybody jumping on each other, and they had to yell at him to get off the field. But we timed it. It was just a tick under 4 seconds from the time he got the ball till he stretched it across. 4 seconds. That's a lifetime for him to get, to dance and tiptoe and dance and wait for people to go by. I mean, we see it during the game and, out in midfield or in other places on the field. But in that situation, if he hits that, if he immediately just takes the ball and runs up, he's not getting in.
How much credit do you give the Steelers for the win, Guy? I mean, do you come away thinking this is a team, this is like a galvanizing win and it was a great team effort, or was it just sort of a mess last night that they were able to get lucky and come out of it on top?
No, I don't think. I think their defense is playing pretty well. Other than they give up the some of the points late. It was ungodly uncomfortable, And luckily they had the pretty good advantage of time of possession in the first half, so the defense wasn't out on the field as much. The temperature at game time was 93. The humidity was through the, I mean, this was like a sweltering July. Like, picture one of the hottest days of the summer in Pittsburgh. That's what this was like. I think I'm going to throw this suit coat away. I sweat through my jacket and tie like I would have if I'd been on the treadmill for 45 minutes. So, I think any time you tough out a win under bad circumstances, and certainly trailing late in the game, coming off a heartbreaking loss, it looked like you're going to suffer another one. Your backup quarterback is starting to look like a bad acquisition, like he can't play anymore, and you figure out a way to do it. And to me, the biggest thing about this game is he seemed to get it in the fourth quarter. It wasn't just one 72-yard pass where a guy made a great move around Brandon Flowers to get open. It's the final drive. You're behind. You got less than 3 minutes to work with. You're using your legs to run for 24 yards. You're picking them apart. Maybe he's starting to get comfortable. And that's what one of my reports on Channel 4 was this morning. Yeah, everybody's excited they won the game. But if you're going to take something out of this game, you're going to be without Roethlisberger probably for at least another month. You know, you've got to win some games, and maybe the light's gone on a little bit here, and he's going to be able to play a little better than what we had seen out of him his first seven quarters.
Yeah, what'd you see of the usage of Vic? Because he had a couple nice throws there on the run. He had the big 24-yard scramble late, which was huge. Early in the game, he was so erratic, though. It's like when he sits in the pocket, he's got open guys, he can't hit him. He's like Rick Vaughn, the Wild Thing.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, late in the game, he was pinpoint accurate. I mean, it wasn't all easy. And when he had a run, he was able to do it. He had one play. He wasn't even, you know, Le'Veon Bell was, I don't know if you remember, Le'Veon Bell was so wide open in the middle, and he was rolling and had plenty of time and no pressure, and he bounced it. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I honestly think that if I was standing in that spot, I could have completed that pass to him. And that's the kind of thing. Look, it's not about knowing the offense. It's about the accuracy of his arm is still strong, as we saw in the long touchdown pass. We've known that. But it's sort of been his whole career. He's a leading NFL rusher of all time among quarterbacks. But the story with his passing has been the erratic nature of it, and I think some of that is still there. But, you know, as I said, it wasn't there in the fourth quarter, and I'm just hoping that he's finally some of that will go away, I think, as he gets more comfortable with his personnel and his offense. And, you know, A.B. Stefanski caught three passes last night. Most of them were early, you know, but he did use Heath Miller on one of the most critical passes of the game, threw a couple more times to him than he did the last game. So, you know, look, if they would have held on and won that Baltimore game, we'd all be dancing a jig right now saying, look at this team. One loss, and, you know, think about this for the defense, Ken. They're the only team to hold New England under 30 points this year, as far as I think. Or was it 30 exactly? But, I mean, they held New England to their smallest amount of points. They had five sacks against San Francisco. They did not allow a touchdown in the St. Louis game. They had five sacks and forced two turnovers against Baltimore. And last night they had a pick six and gave their team their only touchdown over an 80, you know, a long period of time that put them in the position to win. I think we're getting a lot more out of this defense than we expected to, and probably less out of this offense than we thought. You know, Boswell kicks a 47-yarder in his first attempt, so I'm not going to get too ahead of myself here. It's a big win. The biggest thing is, as I said, the improved play of Vic late in the game. Hopefully it's a sign and it carries over. More than anything, there's still 2 years from having lost two games in a row. Somehow you avoid that losing streak and you keep yourself in the mix of things.
How about the Antoine Blake pick six guy? Were people asking him why he was so nonchalant after the game?
Yes, they were. And you know what? You know, that was kind of a hot dog. I mean, he got a little lucky anyway. I don't know what Malcolm Floyd was doing. He just broke off his route. I don't know if he thought there was a sack or the ball was thrown elsewhere, but he got lazy, and that made it an easy interception. But, yeah, Blake was specifically asked afterwards, you know, you guys real places. I knew where I was. I knew I had it. He's very confident. So, you know, I know guys in certain situations like that look up at the scoreboard as they're running with the ball to see where guys are. I remember one time Zach Mills at a Penn State game he was one of the first guys I ever heard say that. He goes, well, when I'm running like that, I look up at the scoreboard to see who's close to me from behind. And I remember Tim Kite was a Penguin defenseman that was almost completely deaf. He used to go into the corners and look in the glass for the reflection to see if he was about to be hit because he couldn't hear the hits coming. So they all have their own way of doing stuff. But I thought he was about a step away from having that ball slapped out of his hands between the five and the goal line.
I guess Philip Rivers said something to the effect of he was hoarse from having to yell over the Steelers crowd for the home game. We asked
his exact quote was, he says, this was a tough environment tonight. He says it was like playing a road game.
Wow.
So, I mean, he still had, 35 out of 48 for 365 yards. But it's sort of the story of his career. He piles up the numbers. He was the leading passer in the league going into the weekend. And, you know, at times looked fantastic. But couldn't get it done, you know, overall when he had to. I mean, he was hot and cold, too. You know, they really benefited, I thought, the Steelers from, you know, the field position for a long time. When you go four straight three and outs, you know, you're not moving the ball anywhere. I don't think they got past the 33-yard line until the final drive, their own 33, until the final drive of the first half, after the touchdown, of course. I mean, they went right down the field like a hot knife through butter on that first one. But those three straight three and outs, and that kept him from really putting up some enormous numbers once they figured out, you know, a better way to cover Antonio Gates. I mean, he was tough, but the first drive, it looked like he was going to have a field day.
Well, was Roethlisberger talking after the game too, Guy? That was a little weird to hear him talk. We had a little audio from him with NFL Network, I guess. And you still think it's going to be another month, probably?
I didn't talk to him. And if he talked afterwards, I mean, I had my guys picked. I wanted to talk to Blake. I wanted to talk to Wheaton. I wanted to talk to Vic and Tomlin. And, you know, all the guys that I had picked, I got. I saw no reason to interview a guy that didn't play. But so right. If he talked, I'm not sure who he talked to or what he said.
Okay, but you got no sense that he's coming back soon, like next week or going to try.
Oh, my God, no. Why? Did he say that?
No, I was. Well, we had heard some reports maybe a week ago that he was better than, I don't know. Maybe I'm grasping at that. We'll see.
Yeah, no, I was watching. I was waiting for Blake to finish putting on his shirt so that we could interview him. I was looking over, and I was watching Ben taking off his sweats and putting on his socks. And it looked to me, maybe I'm reading, like he was grimacing as he put the socks on the injured leg. So he doesn't look to me like a guy that's ready to play. But, you know, that might not be another month or all the way to Thanksgiving or whatever the original possibilities were, but I certainly don't expect to see him playing against Arizona.
All right, well, rub the Ron Burgundy statue before you come back. Was it a pleasant trip for Team 4?
Oh, I'll tell you what. No, we had a disaster here yesterday. The heat made it miserable. I wish we would have wore golf shirts. I mean, I'm not kidding you. You're wearing a suit and tie for all that time. But anyways, we have a stage set up out in the parking lot. A few years ago, they changed the way these pregame shows work. You have to be off the field 45 minutes before the game. Well, we want to be on the field as long as we can. So Andrew and Sally were on these risers with a tent, you know, camera and everything all set up the way they do, right by the ESPN trucks. And I was on the field, and then I had to come out. So our crew was over there at 8 o'clock in the morning yesterday setting all this up. We're on the air at 5 o'clock back east time on the news. I'm in the press box. Andrew and Sally are on the air because I had an hour till my first hit. And some guy from the parking authority comes out and says, we have to move the set. Well, and so our camera guy goes ape. He's like, it took me all day to set this up. What do you mean? Turns out whoever told us to put it there, whatever security guy told us that was the place we should set up, we took two parking spots up for the set. Apparently we were on some San Diego councilman's tailgating spot. I'm not kidding you. Well, they get into this argument. He says, there's no way I can tear this down. We won't get on the air. And the guy says, I don't care if you get on the air. And he brings like 12 henchmen over that physically pick up the set, and they broke our desk. This is about a $2,000 desk that we stand at when we're out on a remote like this, and just left the thing in a shambles. So they wound up, and we're getting these emails like, why are you guys out in the parking lot? I thought I was in Philly or New York the way we were treated, honest to God. And I didn't know this was going on. It's a good thing because I probably would have wound up in jail. I'd stay out of Tijuana, but I would have wound up in jail for fighting the parking authority guy. So he's my early vote for Jagoff of the week tomorrow. So I'm anxious to see if the Channel 4 pursues any action about having the set broken like that. But that we set up where they told us to set up. Apparently the guy at 8 o'clock in the morning had told us to set up. There had no authority, though, to tell us to do that. So, no, it did not all go smoothly, but everything on the air did.
Well, they're moving to L.A., so... Chuck the Fargers, as some people would say.
The guy said, tonight's attendance 67,815. The Chargers, thank you for attending. And I said, yeah, we'll see you next year in Los Angeles.
Oh, man. All right, safe flight home. We'll talk to you Thursday.
Okay, Ken, thanks.
All right, see you later. Guy Junker out on the West Coast, San Diego, looking for Baxter the dog and his mother, Dorothy Mantooth, or whatever other Anchorman quote you want to try to drum up. And it's Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady. That's a scientific fact. Time to get Chris Adamski on the line. We'll go right back to San Diego here on Trib Live Radio. This is Josh Taylor, hard at work behind the scenes. Just want to run over some of the defensive numbers in the game. The Steelers, this was really a team effort type of win. They had sacks from Jarvis Jones and Bud Dupree. Timmons led them in tackles with 9. 2 tackles for loss, 1 pass breakup, which was huge, right? I mean, that's the... 3rd and 8, end of the game, last play the Rivers ran, the last Rivers pass, it would have gone for pretty big yards if connected. But it didn't because Timmons was there to knock it down, and they settle for the field goal, which then gives the Steelers time and also just a 3-point deficit to come back and take a shot at the end zone. Sean Spence, 8 tackles in the game. 7 apiece from Cockrell and Mitchell. Vince Williams with 6. Jarvis had 5 tackles in the game. Tuitt, Robert Golden played a lot when Will Allen left the contest. I mean, it was really an all-hands-on-deck committee for the defense. You could say the same about the offense, too, with the big catch that Wheaton had. Hayward Bay wasn't real prominent, but he had the big leaping catch at the end of the game. They got Heath in for the big grab at the end. I mean, the only guy that let them down was Spaeth. He had his 1 catch this month, this year, his opportunity, and he dropped that one. And it could have been a big one. Let's go back out to the West Coast, though. Chris Adamski was there to cover the locker room, as our guy Junker was. And Chris, along with Mark Cabali, Trib Total Media, where Cabali was stalking him at his breakfast the morning of the game. And I know what it's like to travel with Cabali, Chris, so we feel for you. I know it's been a it's got to be a rigorous journey, but quite the entertaining affair at the end, was it not?
Yeah, it was frenzied and pretty unexpected too. Like, if I get these numbers right, we'll hear while I'm in the car. But I think it was they had 7 net yards over the previous 12 plays before that long touchdown to Wheaton. And that was over 5 drives, 5 possessions, 12 plays, 7 yards. And you're just thinking, there's no way they can come back and win this game or score any points unless there's another pick 6 at that point. And not only do that, and they score again. As you well know, just to win the game. So that was pretty unexpected at that point. And, in our business, it's not a fun ending, that's for sure, whenever you got lead changes and everything like that. I think it's last second, but it had to be fun to watch, yes.
Who did you cover the room, or were you typing the game store way up top? And if you covered the locker room, what was the most compelling stuff out of there?
I went down. I wasn't in there that long. First of all, it's a very small visiting locker room. That whole stadium reminded me of something out of the early 80s, I think. It was just a big concrete place with a small dot matrix scoreboard and just, concourses aren't that wide, and the locker room just looked like something out of, Rossi and I were talking that it wasn't any bigger than the visiting locker room at Casal. Think about that. The hockey team has 20 players and the football team has 46 to dress. So that kind of gives you an idea of how cramped it was in there. But, of course, it was in a good mood. I did some of the defense. I talked to a few defensive players. Because the defense, in a way, I know they started out that poorly with a touchdown in the first possession. And the Chargers scored in their final 3 possessions. But in between, there were 8 possessions. 5 of them went less than 10 yards, and the other 2 of them were turnovers. Of course, one of them was a pick 6. So that kind of shows how good the defense was, at least in the middle of the game. I think they got gas. It was a 93-degree day, which is completely uncharacteristic for San Diego, as you know. And especially that there's no defensive line depth whatsoever right now. So Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt are out there play after play after play, possession after possession after possession. So I talked to Cam Hayward some about that, some to Antoine Blake about his pick 6 and kind of the casual manner in which he did it.
and also some of their Arthur Motes. And, you know, they're kind of taking pride again. If you take away Justin Forsett, that run defense is starting to remind you again. It's not as dominant as the previous decade of Steelers, where literally nobody would run the ball on them. They wouldn't have a 100-yard rusher for 4 years at a time or whatever it was. But it's getting back, showing more signs of that again, where teams have a lot of trouble running the football with their running backs.
Yeah, it's a good point, because Gordon was held in check last night, and Woodhead did more damage on the outside. In terms of the Keith Butler approach, Buzz, Rivers had great numbers against the blitz, and yet they blitzed the hell out of him. Was it a good call, or, you know, was it stupid?
Well, I think that just I got a feeling that that's sort of the identity that he wants to have, that the defense wants to have now, and if that's who you are. And I know you can, of course, game plan everything for anybody else, but I think this is what they're going to do. And with that offensive line or San Diego, and then they were down, how many bodies were they down? So I imagine that was Carter. Of course, we didn't talk to Keith Butler or anything after the game, but I imagine that was a lot of what the rationale was for it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, and from that sense, it's working. They got 16 sacks on the year now, and they've got a couple pick six, so they're coming up with plays. I mean, the forced fumble. So they're getting production, and that said, like, they look embarrassing sometimes. You can't take away the four set runs, and the tight ends again killed them last night.
Yeah, that's what I mean. This isn't, like I said, why do I try to preface it there? And, you know, showing signs. And even last night's a good example. You asked, like, what I was doing after the game when I was writing about the defense. But I really came away kind of from the eye test, or at least during the middle part of that game, so those last couple drives, thinking this defense is, I don't say it's back, but it's not the weak link. But put it this way, when Roethlisberger's playing and the offense is at its potential with Martavis, and if his defense can play the way it's playing these first, other than Justin Forsett aside, other than that, really all five games, I feel like, I know Brady did what he did against them, but if this defense can be this, you know, average, which is what it's looking, then, you know, this team has a chance to do something. And, you know, we saw some of that in this game, and I don't know where my track thought is, because we're at the rental car place now. So I had a point there somewhere, but I'm going to just completely punt it right now.
How about the crowd, Buzz, before we let you go and you guys take the car back? What would you estimate? I mean, you've seen a lot of these crowds before, but was this as big or bigger than ever?
Yeah, you know, it's odd, because I do feel like, and I'm as guilty as anybody, I feel like it kind of, a lot of times it does get exaggerated, just because, you know, you have the towels and it looks like, and don't get me wrong, it's definitely always a large presence at these games, other than, I'm actually curious to see Kansas City, because that's one of the few places in the country where, whether it be because Chiefs actually sell out and the Chiefs have a, you know, a fervent fan base, and it's the space of Kansas City is not a place where many people transplant. There's not a lot of transplant at Pittsburgh, so Kansas City is one of the few places where it's not a heavy, heavy presence, but, you know, even talking to Philip Rivers after the game, I wasn't there when he was saying it, but just seeing his quotes about how it was tough, and, you know, and his voice was hoarse. He said it only happens on road games usually, and it was definitely loud. I mean, I honestly, I don't think you could tell. What's it is? I went to the bathroom once, and you hear a loud cheer coming back, not seeing what's happening, and you literally don't know what's happening, because it could have been either way. And then when the official announced the touchdown, that the review was upheld, the play was upheld, that roar of that crowd, that could have been just as loud as it would have been at Heinz Field for a Steelers play.
Some people who have never been to Pittsburgh, like one of our emailers, Joe, says, if you've never cleaned snow off your car or half your family was not unemployed, you're not a true Steeler fan. But a lot of these people have never cleaned snow off their car. It's amazing, the phenomena. They really are America's team from that standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of factors go into it, of course. I mean, there's the generation from the 70s, and I think that's why you hear about the Steelers fans in Mexico. You know, that was the dominant team then, and whatever, they were on TV, and you know, and that's definitely a big part of it. But, of course, a big part of it is, yes, that so many Pittsburghers had to move in the 80s, and they lost their jobs and moved, you know, moved south and moved west. That's where a lot of these locales, San Diego or Phoenix, or you go to Miami, and there's big crowds there. And part of it is, yes, the Steelers fans literally do travel. I think that might be the smallest factor. I mean, people say they travel. Well, I don't think they literally mean a lot of times they travel. I think they mean if there are road fans everywhere, just like a lot of college teams, Notre Dame or whatever. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, this was, you know, it never ceases to amaze you. It never, you know, you expect it at this point, especially, again, when you go south and go far west. But this might have been. I mean, maybe it's because it's, you know, the Chargers, of course, might be leaving. Maybe there's a little bit of disenchantment from the San Diego fans themselves. They were more willing to sell their tickets or something, or give up their tickets or not buy tickets. But this might have been the one. And I wasn't in St. Louis. I heard that St. Louis was a pretty pretty dominant showing of Steelers fans too.
Well, safe travels back, Buzz. We'll see you back here in the Berg, and keep Cabali in line, will you?
Yeah, you got this crew, Chaz and Cabali and Rossi and me. It's quite a traveling crew we got here, but I'll work on it. Don't worry.
All right, man. Thanks for the check-in.
All right, take care.
Chris Adamski out in San Diego. The crew is coming back, and our crew's over at the Tomlin press conference, so we got to get there momentarily. Josh Taylor and I, Ken Laird, we'll keep you through the noon hour of the show, 1 p.m. today. Our final Pirates Roundtable show of the day, so we're going to get some baseball talk in before the day is done. But it's all Steelers here for the next hour, all brought to you by Giovanni's Pizza and Duffy's Beer. This is Trib Live Radio.